Well, here in South Africa, we are somewhat removed from what's happening in the inside track on Trump tariffs, but not so Anthony Ginsberg. Anthony is the founder of Gins Global. He's a South African who has been living in America for decades now, and he was intimately involved in the YPO summit over the last 2 days, actually facilitating a panel with some real heavy hitters on the trade side. He's going to share with us what they told him. And also good news is that Anthony will be coming out to South Africa in March for the Biz News, BNC 8 for the Biz News conference. Look forward to hosting you there, Anthony. You'll have lots to tell us about. But let's begin at the beginning, the YPO Summit. It's in LA, your hometown?
Yeah, I've been out here after being on Wall Street for a couple of years, Alec, at Solomon Brothers and at Barclays. And I've been in Los Angeles almost 28 years.
And they drafted you in to help. Well, first of all, I presume you have to be a member of the Young Presidents Association to begin with. And then secondly, who actually attends those closed doors, behind closed doors of conferences of the YPO?
Yeah, there are about 30,000 members globally very quickly, with about 500 chapters globally from Saudi Arabia to the US to all parts of Europe and Africa as well. I've actually chaired YPO's financial services network. They have real estate networks, all various kinds of different categories for businessmen globally to connect. So yeah, it's a membership only event. And we had Trump's former trade ambassador. This is the US trade representative in his first term, along with the foreign minister of El Salvador and a geopolitical expert on the panel. So it was a lot of fun.
And deep insights that we in South Africa would not ordinarily be receive access to. So what can you tell us about the conversations that you had there?
I'd like to be more positive. It's late at night here, Alec. This happened in the last 24 hours. Truth be told, the BRICS, including China, India, and South Africa, are in the dog box right now. It's not news really to your viewers. But it's going to be tough for South Africa to conclude a deal, trade deal currently, despite the concerted efforts of the trade ministry. And they've tried their best, but at this point it's become a political animal, much like you've seen with the White House and Brazil, with the 50% tariffs on Brazil. You also have to understand the tariffs are across a broad spectrum. We've got Section 232 tariffs, which are for national security. And then we've got Section 301 tariffs, which are for unfair trade practices against China. There's a massive groundswell amongst the U.S. electorate, not so much the elites, Alec, but the electorate who voted Trump in, to really push tariffs and continue to reduce these unfair trade practices. Many Americans feel they've been taken advantage of, particularly by the Chinese, with most favored nation status under the WTO system. The Americans mostly here think that the WTO is very broken and has been negative towards the U.S. And has allowed a lot of cheap imports. And unfortunately, AGOA sort of falls into that category, which has benefited many of the South African exporters, but it's not viewed favorably on this side.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-bike cars.
A farmer.
What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about e-bike cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW up?
It was just a runaround.
Cool cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Danay. Were they all out of Rangers?
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
The Americans generally, and I know this from having been friends with many Americans over the years, they seem to be more financially savvy, better financially educated. I can remember a pal telling me about CDs and not the music type, but the financial type. Decades ago, when I wasn't even sure as a financial journalist what he was talking about. So what is it that they are understanding to happen? And is this something, a political story for them, or is it actually very real?
You know, it's very real. I have to just say, because I'm in the mutual fund and ETF businesses here in America, Americans live and breathe their pension funds every day. They have to provide self-directed investments, whether it's in ETFs or a particular financial product. I've just come back from a European roadshow. The average doctor in London, Alec, doesn't know what an ETF really is or much about index funds versus, you know, active versus passive management. In America, you're pretty much forced to have a take control of your 401k investment. You can't just rely like Europeans do on some defined benefit pension plan in Germany or in France that will kick in when you hit 62 or whatever the magic number is. So here the people, you're right, are much more savvy. Look, there's been a political groundswell against these massive twin deficits that America has been suffering. You've got the trade deficit, the budget deficit, but in particular, the trade deficit against China has ballooned to massive proportions. Trump has been zeroing in on that during even his first term. But you've also got trade deficits that are massive against Japan and the EU. So you could argue, why is Trump going after poorer countries like South Africa and some of the Latin American countries? When you talk to Trump's former trade ambassador and some of the other knowledgeable guys in DC, they say, look, we've got to actually go after all the countries in some way, shape or form. Otherwise, the Chinese and others will just reship their goods via third party. So BYD was planning, this is the electric vehicle manufacturer, was planning a massive, it was going to be the biggest auto plant, I believe, in the world, certainly the biggest electric vehicle plant, just south of the San Diego border near where I am. It was going to be in Mexico. And basically, the Americans have now put a kibosh on that. So yes, it's certainly political, but it relates to this sense that the U.S. middle class has been hollowed out. You know, we talk about a K-shaped recovery currently where the upper, let's say, 10% and wealthy Americans are feeling pretty well off. Generally, their stock market accounts have done well, 401ks, et cetera. And the poorer, lesser half of America has really been suffering. And Trump has been voted in by the middle and working class here. I call it the revenge of the working class that really voted him in. They were against the illegal migration, these open borders under President Biden. So last but not least, I think the Europeans get wrong, having just come back from Germany, Switzerland, and the UK. They view Trump, he's clearly not everybody's cup of tea, and we get that, but he's very business friendly. The deal makers on Wall Street, Alec, including Goldman Sachs, are busier than ever. Goldman just hired the largest cohort of managing directors in their history. So my friends on Wall Street are actually busier than they've been in 4 or 5 years. Under President Biden, as you know, he stopped a number of mergers and acquisitions, and that's really changing. The head of the Securities Exchange Commission, this is the SEC, the head of the Federal Trade Commission, these are all business-savvy folks. Trump's hired more than really two dozen top private sector individuals to fill key cabinet roles, including the trade ambassadorial or trade ministry role here. So these are all private sector individuals. They are deal makers. Just in the last hours, you may have heard this, Alec, they are striking a deal now with four Latin American countries to import coffee and bananas more cheaply. They're going to reduce tariffs on that. So they're trying to be pragmatic at the same time as being tough on certain countries.
The world's a big place, and there are many countries that do export into the United States, and presumably it will be impossible to do deals with each one of them. So I'd be very interested to know where South Africa sits in all of this. How high a priority are we for the deal makers to try and get something over the line?
Well, to put a positive tint on this, it's going to be very difficult for the Americans to get a China deal done. Most cognoscenti in DC don't expect a Chinese deal to really be done. There are these side detente deals on soybeans you've probably read about, but an overarching China deal, an overarching India deal are very, very difficult to achieve in DC. South Africa has actually got some pull, because if you can do a rare minerals deal, a Simonstown deal with the Navy, geopolitically, South Africa remains important for the US. And they understand that China is increasingly dominating Latin American trade, dominating even parts of African trade, partly with deals that frankly are putting many of these countries in a tough debt situation. Often, as you know, China funds these harbors and railroads and ports and airports, and then these countries can't pay back the loans. America recognizes that they've been slow on the uptake the last two decades in Africa, and they would like to get a deal done. I think if South Africa can be pragmatic and say, hang on, we've got 650 American companies already operating in SA, surely we can ring fence some of these political items so that we can continue to grow more American trade. I think a deal certainly is in the offing.
But there are some in Pretoria who are hoping that Trump is going to be stopped in his tracks by the Supreme Court. Now, you in your panel would no doubt have dug around a little bit on that and the likelihood of the Supreme Court reversing all the Trump tariffs. What were the experts behind closed doors, of course, telling you?
Believe it or not, it's a 50-50 toss-up here whether the Supreme Court votes in and rules, I should say, in Trump's favor. The reality of the matter is it doesn't cover the large majority of the tariffs, Alec. So the Supreme Court ruling is very specifically going to deal with something called IEEPA, which is the International Economic Emergency Powers Act that the president has, which relates to fentanyl tariffs and a few other specific tariffs on the reciprocal tariffs. But Section 232 tariffs are not impacted. Those are the steel, aluminum, and things like cars, automobiles. And then the 301 tariffs, which were on China for unfair trade practices, those are actually excluded. This specific IEEPA ruling is related to two lower court cases that Trump lost. Even if he loses these, this particular IEEPA case, ultimately the experts believe he'll go forward with all the same tariffs utilizing the 232 and the 301 trade rules. Those relate to 1960s and 1970s trade practices. You've got to understand what Trump's doing is somewhat unprecedented. The IEEPA has never actually been utilized other than for illegal drugs and opioids coming in here illegally and some other strange shipments. And he utilized it for the various tariffs. So again, it's a more narrow specific area of tariffs. It doesn't cover everything he's done over the last 8 or 9 months.
That's not the message that's being put out by the media, though.
Well, the White House is certainly concerned. They don't really want to have to go and lose a Supreme Court ruling. It would be embarrassing. The 232 and the 301 tariffs that he would then utilize requires some implementation and some additional procedures. So things would be on hold. There may be some reimbursements. That's what the media is covering, that actually the U.S. would have to reimburse folks. I'm aware of it. So it's not an ideal situation. We all want certainty as business folks. And it may actually give South Africa an opening, because if Trump fails at the Supreme Court, he may be a bit more willing to do deals quicker. So in a strange way, the ruling should come out by January, possibly end of December.
So it's not just around the corner. It's going to be months anyway. If you could sit down, and I like asking this question, if you could sit down with South Africa's trade minister and the president and tell them from your experience and from what you understand and you know, and the having facilitated this high-level panel, tell them one thing that you'd recommend that they do. What would it be right now?
Appoint a business-friendly trade ambassador. You know, South Africa hasn't had an ambassador here for coming on 10, 11 months. It's embarrassing. The Americans don't understand that. They want to engage. There's no one really at a senior level to engage. Most of the other countries, Japan, Korea, India, they've all sent multiple delegations, but they also have a full-time high-level ambassador that's really facilitating business-to-business negotiations. So that's the first thing I would say. That separately, on the trade side, the administration here has obviously included issues about black economic empowerment. This is something that the White House, frankly, they were voted in on scrapping DEI in America, and they view DEI as affirmative action, and they assume that it's almost the same as black economic empowerment. Now, one could try and explain the differences and perhaps ring-fence the American 600-odd companies that are already operating there. You've got huge companies from Citibank to ExxonMobil, you know, operating in the country. There's certainly a way to thread the needle on that. And also the expropriation without compensation does come up. I've been in D.C. a couple of times. You know, there could be a market-related payout for American corporations on the expropriation matter. That certainly would go a long way to facilitate a deal being done. But you really need people on the ground here. It's somewhat embarrassing as a South African myself that there is nobody representing our country on a day-to-day basis at the highest levels. Other countries are in the media here. They're putting their case forward, their best foot forward. The Japanese, the Koreans, the Indians. You see these folks on U.S. media constantly.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a disconnect, because here in South Africa, the real message that's all over the media and that the politicians are milking for all it's worth is the misguided view in the White House that there's genocide against Afrikaners, which, yes, there are farm murders, and let's not underplay that, but it's not genocide. I mean, it's clear as daylight to anybody, especially if you just watched the rugby last weekend when Sia was hoisted aloft by two Afrikaners in Eben and Ergia. So we all look at this, and it's a wonderful political message if you're on the South African side saying, you see, they don't know what they're talking about. But how really important in the whole American discourse is that strategy, that angle, which truly to us doesn't seem to, we know it's not true.
Well, this is where the disconnect is and the miscommunication. If you don't have an ambassador sitting nearby the White House with a somewhat empty embassy that's understaffed, it means that, yes, Parks Tower has had a lot of effort bringing over one or two delegations, but to negotiate from 10,000 miles away is very, very hard. The UK did it right. They had Peter Mandelson, and he was able to get a deal done with a 10% reciprocal trade tariff, and it was relatively easy. They were right there on the ground. It took weeks and weeks of hard work. You know, this thing about the genocide doesn't really come up too much in my discussions. I myself and family have got a farm in the Karoo. I tell guys there's no issues for us. Yes, one has to be careful. There are safety concerns. They understand that. That's not their guiding light. I think, honestly, the main focus here has been the affirmative action issue, which they call DEI or Black Economic Empowerment, is not understood very well by the White House. They view the fact that maybe the top echelon of society has benefited and it hasn't really trickled down to everybody else. And then obviously this expropriation matter has cropped up as something that scares certain businesses. So I'm hoping if a market-related payout on expropriation could just be added as an addendum, perhaps things could get back on track. On the trade-specific issues on poultry and on liquid, LNG gas, those seem to have actually been squared away. So I do give the trade ministry in Pretoria credit. They've tried really hard. At this point, you just need to get one or two other issues across the finish line, particularly on the EWC, Alec, and probably BEE. But having people on the ground who can just get it across the finish line is critical, because the White House has got a bit of ADD themselves. They're focused on the next deal and the next deal. And if you're not in town and you're not a presence, then unfortunately SA is going to be stuck at the back of the bus, as you suggest.
Well, it's not surprising when you have politicians, they're going to play the easy game. And the easy game here at home in South Africa is, well, you see these chaps are going on. They're so dumb. They're saying that genocide is happening. And we all know that it isn't. And you've even got a group of people, a group of Afrikaners saying, not in our name. How dare they suggest that there's genocide and so on. But actually, that's just distracting from the real issue, from what you're telling us.
Man, look, I'm a Buddha Ute. My family has been in South Africa for over 100 years in the ostrich farm and other businesses there. Honestly, it doesn't come up as a top issue when you speak to whether it's the trade minister or some of the other top officials here. The main issue for them is they want a fair level playing field, and they don't want American businesses to go into a country, whether it's South Africa or frankly China, and have their land or their properties expropriated. That seems to be the key issue. Yes, they're against certain kinds of DEI or affirmative action as well. I think you can thread the needle on that, Alec. Can I just say, ultimately, Trump and his cohorts are very business friendly. They want to get deals done. I think the rest of the world is underestimating how resilient the American economy, frankly, is. Having just been in Europe, the Brits honestly are continually poo-pooing the US, thinking that there's going to be a bubble in AI and a bubble in the stock market. And yes, we had a pullback today. It's probably a good buying opportunity long term. I mean, the US under Trump will probably continue to have a relatively strong dollar. Something that we don't talk about, you and I, much, is that the weaker dollar has actually helped the big IT firms, the Microsofts, the Googles, all these big metas of the world have massive exports. Having a slightly weaker dollar, about 10% lower against the euro this year, has actually boosted earnings. So the Dow Jones just 2 days ago hit an all-time high, Alec. So Trump actually has the stock market on his side. Inflation is relatively stable. Things for him are all focused on the midterm elections in November. And they've got to have a healthy stock market. They've got to have inflation numbers reasonably good. The oil price can't go too high. So he's got his own issues, and he's under pressure to reduce the trade deficit primarily with China and the EU. South Africa, by the way, has a trade surplus with America, which means that we've got to compromise with the Americans. We actually have been making more money out of America than they have out of us. Our trade surplus has grown under AGOA in the last 5 to 6 years. So we certainly are going to be hurt. I understand there are automobile shutdowns and factories that may be struggling on the citrus farming side too. So the quicker a deal can be struck, the better.
Yeah, no, those are two very important points that you remind us of, which are not always brought into account. On the one, American exports do benefit when the dollar is lower, so it's almost in the engineered to that in a way. Certainly, they'd be celebrating that, and we know from South Africa's perspective, we love the rand, or exporters love the rand to fall. But on the other hand, the issue about certain parts of this economy, which are exporting into the US, running a trade surplus, and they seem to be immune from whatever happened, or rather, they will not be affected by whatever happens in the Supreme Court hearing. You said earlier that automobiles fall outside of what's going on there. So there's going to be no respite for South African automobile exporters. And that's a huge part of this whole concern that South Africa's got.
Well, actually, the UK were very smart. They actually included Rolls-Royce exports and a few other Land Rover exports in their trade deal with Trump. So you can actually include a certain number. Let's say the number is 300,000 vehicles a year. You can actually add that to your trade deal. I think it's critical that South Africa continues to proceed and have these carve-outs on steel, on aluminum, and on the automobile exports. Also citrus. I know that our farmers actually benefit, as do American consumers, by having, I'm able to get grapes and oranges here when it's the wrong season. So there's certainly a huge market for South Africans. Yeah, there's a lot of goodwill towards South Africa. I've got lots of Americans who love to travel to South Africa. They think it's an amazing place. So there's tremendous goodwill. But I have to say that the media coverage could be far better. We don't really, by not having an ambassador on the ground and having enough of a media presence here, it hurts the country, sadly. I mentioned to you previously other ambassadors who are running rings around SA by doing city deals. Forget about the federal government. California on its own is the fifth largest economy in the world. If you do a deal with San Francisco, Los Angeles, deals with Houston and Chicago, these are massive reciprocal city deals. And often you get trade missions coming out from mayors from these large cities, which are frankly even more important than just focusing on the federal government for your deals.
Yeah, that's a very good tip to people like Jordan Hill Lewis. I'm well aware he's told us on BizNews TV numerous times that the Western Cape, and in particular Cape Town, would be very happy to have its own carve-outs, as it were. But just to close off with, the decision by Trump to block off pretty much all immigration into America, excepting for Afrikaner refugees. What is that story there? What is that again because he just doesn't understand what's going on? And I think it's only 7,500 that he's going to allow in when there are 2 million plus Afrikaners. So it's really isn't, he's not, if he really believes that Afrikaners are the victims of genocide, well, he isn't exactly opening up the floodgates for them to come in. So what's all that about? Did you get any sense from those that you engage with at the YPO summit?
Yeah, there are two quick points on the immigration issue. One is that he went after the Indians, who are the biggest users of legal temporary work visas in this country. I actually came on something called an H-1 visa. He slapped $100,000 effective tax on anybody coming in now. But the CEOs of Google and of Microsoft are both Indian immigrants. It's really just a message, frankly, that he wants to get a trade deal done, I think partly with India, because they're the biggest utilizers, beneficiaries of the legal immigration. So they in favor of legal immigration, it continues. President Trump's own wife came through legal immigration. when it comes to the refugee issue, that's really a political football that he's utilizing for his base, Alec. I wouldn't take too much notice on, you know, whether it's 7,000 Afrikaners or it's a slightly smaller number. It's not a primary issue that comes up in my discussions, frankly. The main issue is, how do we have a fair and balanced trade arrangement with South Africa? Can raw materials, the rare earths, for example, be given priority access for the Americans? They're worried about rare earths. Obviously, it's been cut off by the Chinese until recently. So South Africa has some real attractive features that it can strike a deal with. There's LNG, rare earths, the Simonstown port. The Americans look at everything through a commercial diplomacy lens now, somewhat anti-Chinese, frankly, both Democrats and Republicans. And just last but not least, without representation in Washington, there are two sanctions bills that are passing through Congress right now, one through the Senate and one through the lower house of representatives, which, like this Magnitsky Act they're following, targets folks who have been mentioned by the Zondo Commission. And this is now proceeding. We had a government shutdown, of course, it ended because we have Thanksgiving coming up and we couldn't have the airports closed for too long. But these two sanctions bills, boy, they could be pretty negatively viewed, and the media are going to be covering this. So I hope that that also can be addressed by the SA government quickly.
So if you had an ambassador in Washington, they would presumably be able to put another side of the case to those two bills, which do appear to be, first of all, personally targeting senior ANC politicians, and secondly, they won't be good for South Africa generally. And we don't. It's like having a court case and you haven't got any defense attorney.
Absolutely. We need some folks on the ground here. It's not just specific trade issues. As I said, the trade ministry have done their best. At this point, you need an envoy. The special envoy hopefully can still arrive. I'm not sure what the delay has been for 9 or 10 months, or an ambassador. But frankly, the Trump folks speak the language of business. The Commerce Secretary, the Treasury Secretary, these are all ex-Wall Streeters. I actually worked on Wall Street for my sins. They're hardcore guys who want to get deals done. And they look at the bigger picture too, Alec. It's not just one area. It's the whole nine yards for them. They want to do geopolitically important deals. They feel America has been at the back of the bus and been hurt by the WTO and the GATT rules over the last 30 years. It was opened up to the Chinese. They feel the Chinese took advantage and have been the massive beneficiaries the last 25, 30 years. And they think that the presidents, Clinton, Bush, and all the other presidents that came after, were naive to think that China would have fair trade with them. So for them, a lot of this is viewed through the lens of commercial diplomacy. They want South Africa to remain in the Western fold and not fall into the hands of the East necessarily, whether it's China, Iran, and some of the other countries to the East.
So deals are to be done, but you've got to actually buy the lottery ticket, as it were, send someone there and start interacting at the right kind of level. Anthony Ginsberg is the founder of Gins Global. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.